Special guest
Hillary McCloy.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Power Motion Picnic Hour. As always, I'm your host Dave, and as always, alongside me is
Trevor.
Trevor, what's going on? Why is this podcast different from every other podcast?
I don't know, Dave. Is it because it's the last episode of the third season?
Yeah, oh, that was scary. Yeah, the last episode, but just of the third season. Yeah, we'll be back. And that's a cool moment. I like on other podcasts, like they'll say things like, this is our final episode of the season, so we're going to take a little, you know, 3-month break, and then we'll be back right after Halloween, and we'll see you then. Whereas, like, we don't say things like that, but we take breaks. Just they're unpredictable how long it'll be between an episode.
Yeah, you can expect us within the next 10 to 17 days, most likely.
Yeah.
Like you'll hear from us again.
We could take a break right now, or we could release the premiere of the next season in 2 days and then take a break.
Yeah, it really depends on when we can get our next special guest scheduled.
Yeah, you got to do it when it feels right. Like we said in our great discussion that we just had this week with Hillary McCloy, got to listen to your body.
I think I think she generally agreed with the principle, but also opened our minds to a lot of different ways to think about it, which was very cool.
Yeah.
By far, I mean, just maybe a warning for the dear listener that this was perhaps one of the most knowledgeable episode drops yet, with a lot of like actually good advice about running.
Yeah. Warning, you might learn something.
Yeah, just to be prepared.
Yeah, just we don't want to shock the system.
And if you're a new listener, please don't expect this every time.
Exactly. This will be the last time we include education as a portion of the podcast.
Well, perhaps not. Perhaps not the last, but not to be expected on every episode.
Yeah.
To be clear.
Yeah, exactly. Just you know, don't get your hopes up. We'll see. We'll see what happens from here on out.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. But that was a great talk, though. I love talking to Hillary. That was really, aside from being educational, that was also just really fun.
That was really fun. Thank you so much, Hillary, for joining. Yeah, just great to have you on, and great to talk about a wide array of things. I did want to add, because it was right down to the finish on that one where we were rushing against the clock, and we were talking some great classic ski movies. And I also wanted to point out the classic, what I believe to be the best children's book related to skiing by an animal.
Okay.
Which is Buford Little Bighorn.
Okay. That's our children's skiing book of the week.
Yep.
Okay.
So I'm glad I could get that in now.
I'm glad you got that in now. And then coming up, no spoiler alert, but at the end of our interview with Hillary, I think we'll mention the non-running related film of the week recommendation, right?
Yeah. And, yeah.
And a little spoiler, it is a ski film.
It is a ski film. But you know, one of the nice things about the podcast is we often come up with new segments of the week and just release them, and they span all kinds of categories. It's one of the fun aspects of podcasting.
That's the thing about our listening audience, is they demand a new segment every week. They don't want a reliable, you know, repetitive format. They need us to, I imagine people are listening to this while running, and so they just need new forms of distraction on a weekly basis.
That's part of our core demographic. So I don't know, I've got a pretty packed roundup of a combination of fact checks and a few other updates, but should we maybe jump right to Hillary first and then round out the episode with those? What do you think?
Yeah, no, let's go to our interview with Hillary, and then when we return, the thrilling conclusion to that cliffhanger of the correction to the, I can't even imagine how many incorrect things we said last episode, but I can't wait to hear. But yeah, until then, let's go to our talk with Hillary.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
You have a pretty good track record outside of the very first episode, I think.
You only do that once.
Yeah, you only do really? An entire episode unrecorded. That's the most brilliant thing you'll ever do. You only do that once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about it often. Hillary, where are you calling in from?
I'm in Jackson, New Hampshire.
Amazing. Dave and I both love Jackson.
Yes, I feel lucky to live here.
I actually learned to ski at Black Mountain.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So, yeah, Jackson, New Hampshire is an important place in my memory.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a great little mountain. It has a lot. Fun trails. It's always sunny.
I've been back to Jackson, but I haven't skied there since my second day of skiing. Oh. So
you moved onward and elsewhere, I guess.
I would go back, but I don't know. Is the J Bar still there?
I think they tried to resurrect it. They're not running it much. I don't know if it's going to open this year, actually, the mountain. There's speculation. So.
Oh, the mountain altogether?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't been like selling season's passes and, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's all kind of speculation.
That's a bummer.
Town gossip. Yeah.
Is the Wildcat Inn still open?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of things I know there. In Jackson. Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. The covered
bridge is still there, I'm sure.
Still there.
The Wildcat Inn is amazing. My family and I, my young apprentices, and as I call my children, and my wife, who's the unaffiliated member of the podcast, since she's not a listener, we go up there often in the summer, and we'll eat at the Wildcat Inn frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go in there sometimes.
But in any case, we're not here to talk about the Wildcat Inn.
I was just going to say, we talk about inns and taverns of New Hampshire far more than any other running podcast.
Yeah. I mean, there's like definitely, there's something to them. I think they're probably different than a lot of other places.
Yeah. You could call us a running podcast with like a random facts about New Hampshire podcast.
Yeah.
It's almost safer because I feel like we're always accidentally giving out like professional running advice that we're in no way authorized to provide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually kind of great that you're here now to inject some expertise and some facts into the conversation.
Yes. I'd Hopefully. Say from what we understand about your background, you know a lot about running and giving good advice to people who are running. So we appreciate that and the listeners appreciate it. But before we forget, as you might know, we like to start off every episode by asking our special guests to just say their name and if you'd like a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Hillary McCloy, and I live in Jackson, New Hampshire. Good taverns. my day job is I'm a physical therapist, and I run my own PT practice here in Jackson. So I've been doing that for about 4 years. And my like journey to like being a PT and then working with a lot of runners and different athletes, I feel like it's been like my whole life. But my athletic background is I grew up as a ski racer, downhill ski racer, spent a lot of time doing that. And then went to PT school. And then it wasn't until after that, all of that, that I started to run more, because why not? That's what we do when we get older, right? We start running.
Yeah.
And then started to learn about how, you know, you have to take care of yourself when you're running personally, and then just got really interested in it, you know. Started to learn that there are like some skills involved, and it's not just something. I mean, we can just go run, but if you want to start to like break it down and get more technical, which I think I get interested in because of being a PT, taking a bunch of, you know, really awesome courses and then now tried to get a lot of reps with clients and patients. So I backcountry ski a lot now, and I run and hike a lot in the summer, mostly.
Would love to talk about all of that. But as far as the running training and injury prevention, I mean, a lot of it is not from the very little that has been told to me. Well, I shouldn't say very little, but for more knowledgeable people who have talked to me about running, it like a lot of it's not necessarily very intuitive, it feels like.
Which part?
I don't know. Like, if you want to run fast, like, you just have to spend a lot of time running slow, like that whole concept or distance. I don't know. What's your take on all that?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think to run faster, you have to do some fast running, right? You have to, like, your body has to literally do it relatively often to know how to do it and how to be efficient at it. Yeah, I think, like, the, like, zone two is, you know, really popular right now. And I think a lot of people do spend a lot of time running in that, like, lower heart rate zone and then doing some harder efforts and, like, can do pretty well, especially, I think, in, like, the ultra world. I took a couple of these courses from this woman who's out of Chamonix. And, you know, as it removed from the US running world and, like, trends, and from an ultra running standpoint, she was like a slightly different philosophy of, you know, for me, like, it's like a big backstory to give, but, like, doing a little bit more, not so much a lot of slow running.
Interesting.
She, like, believes a lot in, like, cadence and how,
okay,
when you run with, like, a little bit quicker cadence, right, from a load and efficiency standpoint, you're actually much more efficient and there's less stress on the body.
Uh-huh.
So when we go out and run slow for a long period of time, it's actually harder on the body because we're on the ground longer. So we're absorbing longer and you're not getting as much energy, you know, like, you're getting less of that recoil.
And you're much more likely to, like, heel strike and just all the
you're doing a lot more vertical motion when you're you know, you're not really moving efficiently. And so from, like, a scientific standpoint, like, that makes sense to me, at least. And so I've, like, trained myself. I actually, a friend of mine who's a pro runner, Sarah Kies, coached by her. And then I was like, can you coach me? Cause I'm just curious. Like, I want to see with this, like, slightly higher cadence, slightly quicker run training plan, you know, less volume, a little bit more specific, like, how does it carry over? So I did that I signed up for the Vermont 100K last summer. First time I ever was going to do a race that distance.
Yeah.
First time ever I got a coach. I started running in February. I ran that, like, slightly quicker cadence training plan all summer. And my 20 mile runs, my 25 mile runs, I actually felt really good. I wasn't beat up after, which had never happened. I was also probably bitter. And then unfortunately they canceled the race, like, 2 days before because of the flooding. So I didn't get to, like, I did not get to test it out. And then I was, like, so bummed that I, like, didn't.
Oh no. You didn't go out and just, like, do it anyway. Just, like, run.
But I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to do it next year.
Oh, nice.
I needed a year off. Cause I was, like, emotionally
dead. That's okay though. You've built up that extra.
So I was really fit, I felt like. But yeah, I think it all kind of depends on the runner too. Some people are, like, thrive running just kind of at that, like, casual pace and can do it for a long time. But from a movement standpoint, I think you do need to run quicker to go faster. Like, you have to have intensity changes. You have to, like, the body has to get used to moving faster, right? Yeah. Like, it's from a muscular standpoint, from a work standpoint. And I don't know what all, like, the pros are doing these days. Not that, like, that correlates over to much of what we're doing, but I hear things about how, like, I guess, yeah, it's crazy, right? I listen to all the podcasts with, like, the people at the top, right? And they're kind of cagey about what they're up to, but it seems like the volume was really high and then it kind of came back down. Now the volume's, like, going back up again.
I don't really listen to those. Do you listen to those, Trevor?
I listen to primarily one, which we sort of allude to, but I don't know if we've ever referenced it, but we might as well now. I mean, why not?
Sure.
We're here to break. We make the rules. It's our podcast.
Yeah, it's our podcast.
But there's some work I'll play, and what David Roach did at the Leadville 100 recently was like remarkable and so scientific, and it, I mean, he sort of talked about afterwards that the amount of, like, carb loading or
fueling, right? Yeah, because he was running fueling. Like at the high end of his aerobic threshold.
Yeah, so, like, he just ran the whole thing.
Zone 3, zone 2.
That was like his main strategy was I'm going to run the whole 100 miles, which doesn't happen in a lot of 100 mile races.
So did he train a lot at that effort? I think he must have.
I think he does a lot of, well, I don't know, actually. So he set a course record at, and by the way, Dave is a more of a marathon road runner. So he's often learning a lot from the ultra runners that join the show. Yeah. David Roach, podcaster. When I refer to like, listen to more knowledgeable podcasters for specific advice, not us. I'm talking about him and his wife, Megan. The two of them do the podcast and are both pro coaches and pro runners. And, but he's not like top of like the elite ranks, like, you know, necessarily. I mean, I think he was on the US team for like trail running at some point.
Yeah, maybe one of those like world champ, like mountain running ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, like he's pretty high in the sport, but he's not like considered, he's not who most people would think of as like the elite athletes that like compete in the major ultras. And he showed up at this ultra, the Leadville 100, and smashed the record.
Did it within
like called his shot and did it within like 30 seconds in like a 100 mile race.
He said he was going to do it.
He said he was going to do it, and he said the time that he was going to do it because he had planned the whole thing out so precisely and did it within like 30 seconds. I think he beat his time by like 30 seconds.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like you said, the science. And yeah, he figured out if he can, he was like fit enough in that zone that if like he, as long as he kept fueling the body, he's like, I think I can like hang on. And he like did it. I mean, that's like the quick synopsis that I heard.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
What zone was he in? Is he in zone 3?
I think he was saying like in that, yeah, like zone high, zone 2, like within his aerobic threshold. So it depends on people's like zones, I think. But like in that higher, like he was working pretty, it was a step above easy, right? The whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess a lot of it has to do with like how you train depends on like what your goals are too, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big one too, is like, I think a lot of the zone 2 idea is like, just people, it's just like trying to, like, I think that it's like building that like aerobic base and trying to get like efficient there. And it all depends on the person, right? Like if they have like they've built up a strong aerobic base already, you know, they might not need to spend as much time there. They can get more specific and work out of it.
I was on a pretty long run yesterday and I was thinking about the one main piece of advice we always give is to listen to your body, and which I feel like is okay advice though, right?
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Good advice.
Okay, good. I'll keep saying it. And but I feel like I used to always have to stop runs because like I would just get too much knee pain, and I figured okay, like this is too much, I should stop, you know. And it doesn't happen much anymore. And like, and I think it's just from adding the miles and getting stronger and stronger, right?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what was hurting, but
PT, you must not just throw out random advice like us podcasters.
That's true. Yeah. I can say anything. No one can really hold me to it.
Yeah. No, like some of it is just like, you know, all of our tissues that always have sort of like a threshold of like tolerance of like how much load they can take. That's like volume and, you know, like speed or maybe like difficulty of like the trail. And so, you know, if you're just starting out, right, your tissues aren't used to doing you know, every time you increase volume, often you're going to feel it a little bit, right? Cause like, say you were running a lot of like 5 mile runs, then all of a sudden you jumped up to like 7 or 8. Like if you feel stuff like in that new distance, like it's pretty normal. Because now you might not have pain, but like you're like working, you're stressing these tissues longer than they're used to. So they might like talk to you a little bit. Like your body's going to like tell you everything. Like you're saying, listen to your body.
Okay.
And then it's just like, okay, like I went further and I felt it. And so I'm not, you know, it's not necessarily a scary thing. I think we feel pain and we have all very different relationships to pain and like how, what it is and like, you know, then what does it mean? especially with runners, right? Like people they kind of panic. Can't stop running.
Yeah, that's right. I can't. Yeah, if I can't don't stop. Run. Yeah,
it's a weird. But then you just know, okay, like oh my, you know, often when it's in the knee, you know, generally it's like your quad muscle goes over your kneecap and has a very direct impact on our knees, and you know, might have just gotten tight and tired. And then if you, you know, recover the next day and maybe roll out your quads and, you know, that might be fine. And then the next time you go and you run 7 miles again, you might not feel it as much because your body has adapted and it's now used to working for a slightly longer period and like used to that load. The majority of like running injuries that aren't like traumatic, like an ankle sprain or like a fall, seem like they're a lot, a big part of it is like managing like load and volume.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know too, like what is too much, you know, and how resilient. And so that's where like strength is helpful because strength, doing specific strength is going to help build tolerance in those muscle groups that are like run specific. If you're doing like run specific training.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense, right? Like you kind of like ran yourself through it.
I guess.
Some people would have stopped and been like, oh, I can't run.
Yeah.
And maybe they like, you know, that was a bummer for them because they maybe couldn't, you know, work through it. But like, again, pain is like.
There's a fine.
Weird thing.
There's a fine line, right? Between like listening to your body and stopping and then like, but then there's the other impulse, which is like remember those old no fear t-shirts or whatever, you push through anything or
what we call it. Right. No pain, no gain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And those are competing like philosophies in your own head.
Right.
And then like you said, there's the idea as a runner that like, well, I can't stop running for a second.
Mm-hmm, right.
Then
we'll all go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, or like we've talked about it before. I read Murakami's book about running. I don't know if you've ever read that.
I don't think so.
It's pretty great. I mean, he's an author by trade, not a runner, but he runs like a marathon a year and has done a million of them. And he's actually pretty fast. I forget what his times were, but they were pretty respectable for a writer. but he humble bragged so many times in that really short book that he never stopped running once during a marathon.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like I spent a lot of my time working with patients. A lot of them are runners, but like, anything else, especially in the summer, that's going to give you like some sort of overuse injury. So hiking, sometimes biking, you know, you're just doing it a lot because it's nice out. It's just like trying to help teach you like the patient, like what you're feeling and is it good or bad, right? Like, do I push through that or do I not push through that? And then you can kind of learn how to manage it. And then you have a little bit more like control or like, you know, you feel like you have a little more control of the situation, which is nice.
Yeah. You're always like trying to gauge, did you actually get an injury and will you exacerbate it? Or is it just something that's just kind of hurting that you can kind of push through?
Exactly.
I think the weirdest, I don't know, like toe injuries for me, like kicking roots and falling and stuff. I feel like I just can always somehow run through those.
Falling.
Yeah. It's amazing how toes can really shut people down too.
They'll look like really terrible.
Yeah.
Like you'll fall really bad.
Yeah. And then my toe will get all smashed up and swollen and black like the next day or later that day. But then, you know, got to keep running.
Yeah. I don't get a lot of those. I got a pretty gnarly blister though recently.
You fall less than,
like
than
new
I
shoes
do.
Or
it might have been new shoes. I don't remember. It was a long run, but. I don't think I've ever fallen on a run. Like every other episode, Trevor's telling a story about a fall. But you run in the woods, so.
Yeah.
It's different.
It's good. Falling's like, when it happens, usually it's like, you can't, it happens so fast, right?
Sometimes you can catch yourself. Sometimes you just know.
When you're like, do that, like, you like, yeah, you're like. Yeah. But then you save it and then you're like, and then you fall after it.
You fall anyway.
Sometimes when I save it, I'm like, feel like I'm making progress with my running at that point.
I find I was talking to someone today who's a runner and we were talking about like when you trip and you're moving pretty quick, and then that movement you do to like save it, you pull the other leg through, but as we get older, it like hurts more. Like someone really pulled their hamstring really badly from like trying to save it. And they aren't gonna come because they were like, I got a hamstring strain from saving a fall.
Yeah.
And it's like a very, such a quick movement. But we were commiserating how like, you know, 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't have felt it. We're, you know, you get a little older and everything gets like a little tired.
I was thinking about running as an older person, you know, it's all relative, but, and I was thinking about how like I watch a lot of like baseball and soccer. Those guys are always pulling hamstrings, you know?
Yeah.
Like constantly. But it's because I'm like never running as hard as those guys.
I think they're because they're doing so much like sprinting.
Yeah.
When you run fast, it's putting like a lot of stress through those muscles. And the hamstring is always like it's moving like into a really quick stretch and then a quick like contraction really quickly. So it has a lot of this like speed motion and that'll like, if it's vulnerable, it's like pretty easy to like pull it.
Do you ever sprint anymore?
Sprint?
Or like when's the last time you think you did a full sprint?
There's like a local, like early cross country race that I agreed to do this year for the first time. And it was like the adult run club that's in the Valley versus like the two local high school cross country teams. It's like a warm up. It's like 2 miles.
Yeah.
So the first time I ever like lined up on like a cross country line.
Yeah.
And I went out so fast cause I was like so nervous. And I like within like, I was like halfway through the first mile and I felt like my whole body was like, you know, it was like burnt. I was like, done. Like, I'm not going to finish 2 miles.
Oh, I know. I can't. Yeah.
Like, everything was like burning.
Yeah. I did a 1 mile race, like a, you know, an official race, 2 weekends ago. And it was like, and at the end, my lungs were burning. And that's not a feeling, you know, you get from running, or I've ever gotten from running a marathon or something like that.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
It's such
like
a
everything
different...
hurts. Like your lungs hurt.
But I haven't I haven't sprinted though. Like I mean, like 100 meters, you know, or like 200 meters. I haven't done that.
There's also like it's like a memorial event at like the local, the first Friday night football game here. It's a memorial, and it used to be a mile race, and now it's 4x400 because they couldn't get enough people to come be brave enough to run a mile in front of
crowd. Yeah.
So I did that a few years ago, and I'd never done that before, really. And you know, they were like, just don't go out too hard. You know, it's a long lap.
Technically a sprint.
Technically a sprint, but
400.
That was painful.
That's a painful distance.
That's like worse than like a ultra. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I ran it in high school. It was painful because I was not running it. I don't think what I was doing was sprinting. It was supposed to be sprinting.
I remember it was the last event of my high school athletic career was the 4x400 relay. And I was like, I'm going to go out and I'm just going to leave it all out there. And it was, and I think I remember it being rather painful. It was not that glorious as I remember.
I don't have a lot of power. When I was ski racing, everything is like a sprint. So a lot of what we did was like power based. And I never was like that great at jumping or any of that. And then, I was good at like the bike endurance test. And then now, so it makes sense that like I'm more comfortable running like slower, longer. Yeah. Than, like, I don't pack much power.
What was your best event skiing?
I was pretty equal slalom and giant slalom.
Oh, cool.
My like ranking was always kind of similar.
Awesome.
And you skied at very high levels, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was lucky enough to get on the US ski team. I spent a lot of time
winter
for a long time.
That's why that's who I always rooted for. I root against the Austrians.
Yeah.
For the US.
So yeah, we never did anything aerobic. That's for sure.
That's interesting. Yeah. I remember in high school skiing, it was always like the training before there was snow was just dry land training, which was just running. It was just, you just had to run.
When I was on the wrestling team and I felt like so much of our trading was just running.
Yeah,
because it's just conditioning
trying to
for that.
Trying to
stuff.
Lose yeah. weight to get to the. Next
I was gonna say, is it all about like being a certain weight? You had to go like run in like a plastic bag or whatever.
Right. Yeah, no. Somehow, I think it was sophomore year in high school, and for some reason, I was wrestling that year instead of I should have been running track, but I was growing like significantly vertically, and I like lost weight over the course of the season because of the wrestling team.
Yeah,
and I like dropped weight classes. You know.
Yeah, I've heard it's like very tiring.
It's exhausting. I think it's 2 minutes each round, and it's just like full exertion the whole time.
Like every muscle in your body.
Yeah. If you take like a second off, like you'll just get pinned or whatever. So like,
yeah,
I don't recommend it as a sport. It wasn't really that. It wasn't really that fun. No, high jumping on the track team was like 1,000 times more fun.
Yeah, I feel good about settling into running long distances at whatever pace I choose as my like current pursuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I was getting at is I kind of want to run 100 meters sprint.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm seeing if you guys have done that. It sounds like no for anybody.
Never.
I mean, I haven't.
Well, I have in like workouts maybe when I was racing, but I don't remember.
I've done like strides as work in workouts, but full on sprint, no, and I don't care to. I mean, it's kind of a weird thought to like never sprint again. So
that's what I'm
I
saying.
Sprint, but
yeah,
I or also like feel when, like yeah. I don't know. When I was younger, the feeling was like I'm fast. Like this feels fast. I wasn't that fast, but it felt like good. I feel like at this point, it would not feel good.
Or every once in a while, when you like, if I had a workout, or maybe I had to do like 9 out of 10 effort, right? You're like,
fast,
and you're like, wow, I don't know if I could go faster than this, but it doesn't feel that fast.
Yeah, right. So the 10 out of 10 wouldn't be that fast.
Yeah, like I don't think I can go faster. And then you watch like the Olympics, and like it's insane how fast they're moving.
I think it's the Olympics that made me start feeling this.
Fired
way.
You?
Yeah, that I want to run. I want to do 100 meter full speed as a 42-year-old.
Yeah, I have a friend right now who she does like all different distances, but she's like, you know what? I want to like revisit like the mile and like kind of train for it, and, like see what happens. Kind of fun.
The mile rules. And yeah, that exactly. Like when you get a little older, all you do is like extremely long distances, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. like marathoning becomes common among people a little bit older. But the mile that I just ran 2 weekends ago was like super fun and I loved it. I didn't train for it though, you know, so it had that. One aspect of it was I ran out like you ran out of the gate with no idea of what pace.
Right, had a pace. Yeah.
No idea what I should be running. And it worked out fine actually. But like I think I picked a good pace. But it's a fun distance to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also doesn't really make sense to do, like, I guess if you're not in a race, just to go out and run a hard mile like in your neighborhood.
It's definitely harder to like push, you know.
Yeah.
I did the Jackson 10K this year is like the first road 10K I've done. I've probably done like 3 in my life.
Okay.
And I signed up kind of last minute and I didn't have a goal. I was just like, I'm just gonna like run steady. Like it starts with a big climb. So it's like go up the climb and then kind of like go. But there was a guy from like 2 miles in that was just like sitting right behind me. And so we ended up like, so it made me like try, like I was like in the race. So I was like, it made me run like way faster.
Yeah.
He was there. Because in ultras, like usually in the US or like around here, like you're by yourself and you're just kind of out there and you're like, oh yeah, I think am I racing still? Like you forget what you're doing.
Is this still the race?
And so I ran like, I think I did run a PR. I haven't done very many though, but it's because I was like in the race, like mentally that like we were like working with each other and like, I was so sore for like days after.
What did you run? Do you remember?
I ran like a 42, like 20 maybe.
Oh, yeah,
that's awesome.
With like 600 feet of climbing.
Yeah, that's
faster than I thought it was going to be. But it's because I was like getting like pushed.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I don't run nearly that fast.
It was pouring rain and it was like amazing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, rain helps sometimes. I was doing a training run recently for for a marathon I'm running soon. And how long was it? It was like 14 or 15 miles, and it rained like a ton for like the first half of it. So I was soaking and it was great.
Yeah, it's like distracting. Sometimes you feel like you're like going faster.
Yeah,
it's hot.
I was running up this steep hill in Central Park and people were like hiding under the trees and just running in the downpour. And it was like, great.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. No, you gotta, I like on, you know, longer adventures and stuff. The weather's always part of it. You know, it's, you gotta embrace it or otherwise you'll just probably end up being miserable.
I mean, it rained like every day last summer. So
yeah.
A lot of wet shoes.
It was pretty rainy last summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it rained up here a lot because all the climbers and mountain bikers were like pretty sad.
Lamenting. Runners
were like, we're good, we can run.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, choose a less fickle sport, people.
Yeah, yeah, or like all the hikers, like, you know, it's wet up on the like, up on the prezzies and stuff. It's like less.
Yeah, I get it on like the definitely like the you know exposed like stuff, mm-hmm. but that can be a dangerous thing. But
yeah,
when you're in the woods, you know, it's gonna get wet. Sure,
yeah.
It's fine in Central Park too.
yeah,
no problem.
So I don't know. I was thinking we haven't done this. I think we did this once before, but we could maybe try if you're up for it, Hillary. A lightning round.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
Can I say maybe?
And it's not pre-planned. So Dave and I will just think of rapid fire questions, or not rapid fire, but like, you know, ultra paced.
Exactly. Questions. Zone 2 paced questions.
All right.
Yeah. And we'll see where it takes us. But I'll start out with a familiar subject anyway that we often talk about, which is minor ski areas of New England. What is your favorite? You can define minor.
Still open?
You can define minor however you like. So
I'd say it doesn't have to still be open.
Doesn't have to still be open. No, you can do a throwback. You can go Kings Ridge if you really want.
I mean, I don't. There was this place near Brattleboro, Vermont, called Maple Valley.
Ooh.
That we used to race at when I was like a little kid, but like nobody knows. It was this little tiny hill that's gone. And it wasn't
Can
even
you
that
still
amazing.
Ski it? Can you still like just go up and ski it if like?
Me? Probably. I don't know how much it's grown in.
It's probably grown in.
But it's like right off Route 30, north of Brattleboro.
North of Brattleboro?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I just learned? See, this is how slow the questions are coming in. I just learned that they renamed Suicide 6.
Yes.
And I get it.
Yep. I renamed that one. Oh, I think that might be the only one back here. And then now I can't tell you what it is. It's a different name. But
yeah, it's. I mean, it's a similar sounding name, but
yeah,
I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, they renamed that one.
Yeah,
Woodstock is it or around near?
Yeah, yeah.
Pomfret or Woodstock. Yeah.
Yeah, I was driving around there, and
that place is steep.
Yeah, I've never skied it. I always wanted to, but
yeah.
All right, rapid fire question number 2. What's your favorite ski area outside of New England?
Ooh. See, the problem is I've skied at like so many places in my life, which is amazing, but I've skied on like 2 or 3 trails at all the mountains.
That like the race trail and all.
Like rumors, yes.
Yeah.
So I've been to like all these like iconic ski areas and all over the world, but like I can't really tell. I like can't really be like, oh yeah, like I'm not a great powder. I don't ski much powder. I grew up skiing.
Yeah.
Well, where did you have your best day skiing? Because it could be very like specific to you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the first time I ever experienced just like bottomless powder was at Squaw.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Now called.
Oh yeah.
They renamed it's called Suicide
Palisades.
Yeah.
When I was living, so after I went out and lived in the California for a little while after college and
cool.
to kind of get away from skiing, but I went up a few times and it happened to be up there for just this like powder that just like holds you up, you know, like that you see, that you hear about. And I'd like borrowed some powder skis and it was pretty wild. And then, you know, that should have made me like move to a ski town out west, but I never did.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen the film Hot Dog?
Yes.
Yeah, that's at Squaw, right? Or whatever it's called.
I think maybe. There are some amazing like old ski movies. There's Ski Patrol.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Hot Dog.
I had a friend
just, like outrageous, but amazing.
I had a friend in college who did a screening of Hot Dog once a week.
Again, I'm right.
Yeah, I think I partook in a few of those.
It was great.
Speed Patrol was definitely a favorite growing
up. Or Aspen Extreme.
Aspen
Extreme. I know a lot of friends that got more guy friends that just
There's the ones that are like more true like ski movies, but are from the period, like all the old Warren Millers or like Wizard of Oz. Did you guys ever see that one? Yeah.
From a ski downhill racer.
With Robert Redford. Yes. Yeah.
It's hard to find. I don't know if you can, I mean, you must be able to stream it somewhere. I think it was 1969 that was made.
It's definitely old. That sounds about right. And it
is pretty amazing because they show like how downhill used to be and just like the trail was the course.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Like, that's like classic, like more, it's more dramatic.
We'll make that our non-running related film.
You watch Downhill Racer with Robert Redford. It's pretty good.
I should tell you guys we're running low on time. So do we want to talk about anything important, or do we want to just do more rapid fire questions until the clock ticks down?
Well, Hillary, I mean, yeah, you can definitely say something important if you'd like to address the dear listener.
Well, I mean. Ski or right, we're talking about I got stuck on skiing.
Yeah, we could talk about skiing. Yeah, there's no rules.
No, I mean running and skiing, right? It's like I've learned about it through PT school, but just like an understanding the body, but like it is in your best interest to do some like strengthening for these sports because they put a lot of stress on the body and it's just gonna make you more resilient to the running and also you should get you should bet some performance benefits out of it. We all have a really hard time doing it. myself included is taking the time. But however you need to like get yourself to do it, whether it's friends or go to a class or however it works, like it really does help. And you know, when you can't do what you want to do, when you get hurt, it's a bummer.
That's some really like knowledgeable and amazing advice, if maybe unwanted by some people who do not want to do strength training.
You're talking about you or me?
Some people don't really get tested until they get injured. And then,
then they want to do it.
Yeah.
The necessary evil, as they say.
And skiing too, like skiing specific strength is really hard to mimic because skiing is such a unique but like movement. But just from working with a lot of people and running, I run like a ski conditioning class called Powder Hour. I've been doing it for 10 years, so I've gotten like a lot of reps on it, and like the best feedback is people are like, I skied differently because I could like control my ski, and I think that's like the coolest thing.
Hillary, we have 3 seconds left. Thank you so much for coming on. This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour. Oh, thanks so much, Hillary. That was really awesome, and that was one of our patented down to the wire cut off endings to an interview.
Yes, we love the constraint of the free version of Zoom. 40 minutes keeps us honest, keeps us all on task.
I try to avoid that, yet it happens 50% of the time. It feels like,
yeah, occasionally we'll get it not down to a rushed, potentially partially cut off ending.
Yeah. It harkens back to a day where there was still an element of danger in podcasting. And so we try to keep that spirit alive, despite with, you know, most podcasts have gotten so tame and predictable and safe.
Yeah.
We'll say it. They're safe. They don't have the anything can happen that we've got going here at the Power Motion Picnic Hour. Although, predictably, maybe we should go to what we prefaced at the beginning of the episode. And I think you said you had a bit of a roundup, right, of corrections and mailbags and
I'll see if I can follow on our lightning round with a little tempo run through some news updates, fact checks, and general administrative business. So first fact check, this one hit the mailbag pretty quickly. The Long Trail I think I had said, you know, oh, like I was talking about Will Peterson, special guest Will Peterson's race recap from his Long Trail FKT, and said, you know, he had just run 100 miles, and the crew was, you know, he's giving credit to everybody else. But in fact, the long trail is 272 miles with like 60 something thousand feet of gain.
And that hit the mailbag pretty quick.
Yeah.
I feel like some people must be listening to the podcast on like double speed to be able to get in that quick with a correction.
Yeah, it was a quick hit back to the mailbag because, yeah, I mean, it was just a mistaken comment. I know the Long Trail is much longer. 100 mile just sort of came out, but it's what the fact checkers are there for, right?
Yeah, thank you, fact checkers.
One other was Courtney's UTMB course record was 2 years ago, not last year.
Another honest mistake.
These things happen. All right. Lightning round. Eva Houston, we mentioned her fourth place finish in the 100. She went on to win a bronze in the 800. So two medals for the greater Power Motion Picnic, our community in Paris this year.
That's what I'm talking about. Congratulations to them and to us, since it is part of the extended family of the show.
And I thought certain listeners might also be interested to learn that our very own Tom Bosworth was one of the main commentators.
Oh, how cool is that
for the Paralympics, which is awesome. And he wrote up some nice posts about it, which I recommend checking out.
Now I regret watching it on mute, trying to sync up the Paralympics to Dark Side of the Moon.
Yep.
who knew that was a mistake?
So I think that's sort of like updates and fact checks, a couple new pieces of news, special guest Pierce, who we haven't heard from, you know, in a little bit, our mistake, got a fourth in the Fifth Avenue Mile.
Fourth place.
In non-binary. So congrats to special guest Pierce.
Do you have what time Pierce ran?
I don't. I just remember fast. I think it was just over a 4 minute mile. I think it was like a 4:02 or something. Yeah.
Good Lord. As I'll add to the news that I PR'd in that event.
Yeah, please. Let's celebrate that a bit.
But I PR'd it with a 6:18. So is, you know, for me, that was thrilling.
That's amazing. I mean, it's got to feel good.
Felt great.
Cole Crosby first at the Cowboy 200.
Woo. Giddy up.
And as far as we know, Coach Friend just set an FKT on the Merrimack River paddle. He paddled the whole length of the Merrimack in 29 hours, sub 29.
I think I just saw that on Instagram, and I didn't even understand what I was looking at, and that's a pretty amazing accomplishment. So congratulations to another former special guest.
And that was just, as I understand it, a scouting run, and there's more big paddling to come. I'm going to go so far as to say we're a running podcast that stretches the definition of running, but paddling, I do not think is running.
Well, are we drawing the line?
I think I might be drawing a line at paddling.
Okay.
Skiing is not running, right? We've known skiing is not running for some time.
Cross country skiing is running.
It is cross country skiing, of course.
Yeah, of course. It's more running than regular running. But
marching band is running.
Marching band is running.
Cross country skiing is running. Paddling is not running. Paddling skiing is not running.
Not running.
Neither is any form of biking.
No, neither is jazz band is not running.
Is heavy metal drumming might be.
That might be running.
We might find out soon.
Okay. That's ooh.
Yeah.
Possible spoiler, yeah.
But that was it. So I mean, yeah, a lot to cover there, but I thank the listeners for bearing with me through it.
Wow, one lightning round right after another. It's gotta be a first on any podcast.
We might, at this point, the special guest community is so accomplished and going on to do such amazing things that we might have to switch format to, like, you know, just posting some of these at least on Instagram, because otherwise we could spend a whole episode just talking about special guest accomplishments.
Yeah, that's true. It'll be like, you ever hear that, you know, the John Hodgman 500 hobo names recording?
Yeah.
It's like that where
I do.
He reads his 500 hobo names over the guitar part from Big Rock Candy Mountain. And it's like a 45 minute recording of him just reading a list of names. I recommend that to the dear listener. Whether I don't know if that's a song recommendation, but it's an audio miscellaneous audio recommendation of the week.
Miscellaneous audio piece. Miscellaneous audio recommendation of the week.
Podcast length non-podcast recommendation of the week.
Yeah,
John Hodgman reading 500 hobo names. I heard that on the radio for the first time and didn't know what it was. And I believe I called you and left it as a voicemail on your right? Didn't that happen?
I think that probably happened. Like that certainly happened. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
I think that happened about 20 years ago. I was like, I don't know what this is, but listen to this.
That's good.
Yeah. Early days of that was like that, those are the pre-podcasting days when podcasting wasn't even a thing yet. Yeah, we
good times.
Cell phones were relatively new. We didn't know what to do with them other than hold them up to the radio. That's how I understood it at first.
I love those. I got some good. I got a couple things that you sent me that way that, when I explored the actual music, decided that the cell phone recording sounded better. I imagined it to be better than it actually turned out to be as a produced actual recording.
Yeah, because the cell phone version lets you use your imagination.
Yeah.
Because you can't really hear it.
Right. Yeah, it's very like definitely very like fuzzed out and faded.
Yeah. And I don't know if we should touch on a quick week in running. Personally speaking, I did just say my big news, which is I ran a 6:18 mile. Yeah, I'm thrilled about. I
congratulations.
Oh, thanks. I crapped out on a 10 mile. I was supposed to be like a 16 mile training run on Saturday, and I crapped out around 10 miles. I think I was just severely underhydrated, but I made up for it by running 17 last night. So
nice on the treadmill, right? That's
the 17 was a hilly. Yeah, a treadmill with a good amount of incline.
That's intense. Oh, and that reminds me, you got to mailbag some mailbag training, some coaching.
Oh, that's right.
Have you incorporated any of it?
I forgot. Yeah, I got some mailbag training advice from Coach Friend, and he sent it before the Fifth Avenue mile, but yeah. I listened to it after the Fifth Avenue mile, so I wasn't able to use any of it. And he was suggesting that I reverse the order of my runs because I did that the day after a long run.
Yeah,
he suggested to switch it around and put my effort into just really trying to get the fastest time I could in the mile, which I didn't do, partially because I didn't know the advice. I'm not sure whether I would have listened if I knew it, but but anyway, I didn't feel too bad the morning of the mile anyway, so I don't know if it would have helped me too much. Could have shaved off a couple seconds, I'm sure, but I flew out the gates like crazy, and actually every quarter mile there was like the time was up so you could see how fast you were going. Cause I don't run with like a watch or anything. As I've said twice an episode for three seasons. When I got to, I feel like when I got to the first quarter mile, I ran it in like, I don't know, a minute 25. And I was a little worried that was too fast, but it all worked out. And like I said, a little burning in the lungs at the end, but a PR. So no complaints.
Well, that's great. I think it's a lot to be super excited about and happy there.
Yeah, I kind of want to run miles more, but it doesn't really fit in your life as much as whatever this is.
It's a little bit. It's like kind of harder to train like intensely for a mile. Like you kind of need to do that on a track almost.
Yeah, I used to like when I used to work in an office, go down to the gym at lunch. And sometimes if I didn't really have much time at lunch, I would just run a really like fast mile.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also not as fun to run fast on a treadmill, I think.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I would, when I do that a little bit. Sometimes I should get back to that. Just like, all right, this is my time. I don't have much of it, but I'll just go run fast for like 15 minutes
and,
you know, do like, you know, 2 miles, like 15, 16 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I got. But anyway, all right. Well, is that all the news we think?
I think that's all the news that's fit to podcast about this week.
So season three is going to end with a whimper.
That's right.
All right,
it's our season finale.
Yeah.
I mean, we could keep going, but we should definitely save some content. And
yeah, that's right.
Of course, we're rolling into season four, switching to Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode conventions, apparently, as was foretold by Jeff Colt. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good. I'm fine with that. I like the nice mellow ending. I'm feeling mellow right now myself. So yeah, a lot of exciting things to look forward to in season four of the Power Motion Picnic Hour, whenever that pilot episode drops. But until next season,
onward.
Special guest,
Hillary McCloy.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Number 389, Poonickers Elias. Number 390, Elf Friend Weingarten. Number 391, Fork Tongue Nigel Fork. Number 392, Would I Apple. Number 393, Hare Lip Mikhail. Number 394, Solid First Draft Patton Taylor. Number 395, Pretty Nichols, The Lamb. Number 396, Not Only, But Also Pete. Number 397, Pen Thief Hickok. Number 398, La Grande Mel. Number 399, Appleby O'Bennigan McFriday, Stand By. Number 400, Lardy Jerry Lardo. Number 401, Low Carb Alex Stovepipe. Number 402, Hugo Stairs. Number 403, Eldred Splinters. Number 404.